Welcome to Ginspired, brought to you by theginshop.ca. This podcast will take you on a journey into the world of gin, where you'll experience this versatile spirit in ways you never thought possible. Now the host of Ginspired, Heather E. Wilson.
Hello and welcome to Ginspired, where we talk about and celebrate everything about the wonderful juniper-laced spirit called gin. I'm your host, Heather E. Wilson, and on today's episode, I welcome Sailor Guevara, a veteran of the spirits and hospitality industry, a published and celebrated mixologist, an author, and an acclaimed podcast host. She's been crafting cocktails and educating people on spirits around the world for a very long time. And today, we're going to chat about her love of gin, what it means to be a spirits specialist and educator, and of course, her favorite gins and cocktails. Welcome, Sailor.
Hey, watch it with that very long time. It's supposed to just be very, not very. Watch it there, Heather.
Yes.
It's nice to be here. I'm super excited that you asked me to be a guest on your show because I rarely get to talk about gin like this. It's usually whiskey, so I'm thrilled.
Oh, well, I'm thrilled because finding a spirits specialist who isn't necessarily a distillery is really fun to talk about gin in other ways, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, okay. But first, before we get into all this awesome content, let's start by sharing what we are drinking today. And Sailor, you get to go first because you're my guest. So what are you?
Oh, that's so lovely. Mm. Oh my goodness. I am drinking something that's super easy to make, but has so many complexities. I'm silently in my head going, oh my God, this is delicious. Oh, now I'm tasting that, but I'm doing it silently. Because that would be weird. One of my favorite gins in the world is The Botanist.
Of course. Yes.
Love it. If you are a gin fan, I'm assuming you also love The Botanist.
Absolutely. So
that's what I went with. And then I'm having this Hella Bitters and Soda from Hella Cocktail Co. Really fantastic Black-owned brand, Happy Black History Month. They make the most incredible bitters. And now they have these canned sodas where it's infused bitters, but like really high quality.
Wow.
And I'll tell you, I just put them together and it's like, boom, I've got a cocktail. I've got a spritzer. I've got a tonic, whatever you want to call it. In like 2 seconds over ice, I'm done. Love it.
Wow. I have never seen that. I'm going to keep a close eye out for sure. For sure. Well, now I'm feeling, man, mine's not as exciting as that, but I do love to stick to the classics sometimes. You know, it's great to experiment and try new things, but I also really love the classics. So today I'm having a very classic gimlet.
Ooh.
Yes. And I'm having one of our maritime gins here, and it is Raging Crow, which you've probably never heard of, but it's fabulous. And so that with a little bit of lime juice, touch of simple syrup, my own dehydrated limes for garnish. And
ooh, I like it.
Yeah, sometimes you just need to go classic and simple. So.
Yeah. You know, I love the gimlet as well. I'm a big daiquiri fan. This isn't, for me, is in the daiquiri category. I love telling people when we talk about cocktails, how easy, just infuse something in your simple syrup and boom, right? Infuse lavender in there. Infuse a little bit of jalapeno juice.
Ooh.
With the lime and the gin and oh, and it just changes everything with just a simple, just add a little something to that.
Absolutely.
Syrup, and there you go.
Yeah. And I love infusing everything. So I infuse my gins. I infuse my.
That's why you love gin.
I infuse everything. And then, of course, I also use some of my infusions, my gin fusions, for my baking and my cooking. And that just
helps with
that kind of stuff, too. So you can use it in so many different ways, which is.
I love it.
And it really lets your creativity kind of shine, right?
So absolutely. Yeah. I think that's why we all love gin so much is that the sky is the limit, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
What spirit can say that? It's, I think there are a few because if vodka goes too far, they're gin. So step off, you know?
Yes. Exactly. Yeah. I mean, that's the whole, well, one of the awesomenesses of gin is that it's so versatile. Mm-hmm. Like just, you can make it your own. You can totally make it your own. Okay. But before we get even, because we could honestly probably talk about every kind of gin and cocktails for day, but let's start at the beginning. And I love that your title is a spirits specialist and educator. So what does that even mean?
I don't work for a brand. I used to. I was a brand ambassador for many, many, many years. Before that, I was behind the bar. And when you're behind the bar, you get a lot of education on pretty much everything that's behind your bar. Right. And if you're smart, you become really good friends with all of your liquor reps, and they'll give you even more education because then they've got an advocate. And now you have all of this knowledge, which is priceless.
Right.
And that was me. I'm a curious person. And so I started to, as I got to a certain point in my career, be asked, can you please, you know, cover this event for me? I know you can talk about pretty much any spirit and it will sound like you're an expert. And I'm like, I can? Okay. And I guess I could, like, once you have the basics down, you get to a point where you have enough knowledge that you can just kind of do a crash course on the brand itself and sound like you know what you're talking about. And I was like, oh, okay. And then I started working with distributors and they would just give me whatever, you know, like take this whole portfolio and go out and just, you know, do events and do tastings. And so I'm a specialist, you know, in the spirits category. And I'm an educator because I then became, I taught in Cambridge, Massachusetts classes. I teach other bartenders. I have helped distilleries understand how to get the best out of their spirits and cocktails. And then I started teaching, you know, everyday people, if they wanted to learn about the spirit categories, especially women, any chance I get to pull up another woman and break another glass ceiling, I'm right there.
Yep.
And then people of color. So just, you know, really just teaching people about, and I guess you don't know until you know, right? Well, people would say to me, well, what exactly is a vodka? How do you make that? I'm like, oh yeah, most people wouldn't really know what that is, you know? So, and trying, I'm not very eloquent when I speak. So I try to just make everything like really like, well, basically you just take grain and you mush it up and, you know, I try to make it really approachable. And apparently people like that. So this is great for me in my career. Yeah. So sometimes I'm educating bartenders. Sometimes I'm educating the distributors before they send all their representatives out to bars and restaurants or liquor stores. They need to know a little bit about the products that they're going to be talking about and selling. So later, you know, it's kind of like a ladder in a career like this. I got to the point where, you know, now I was doing the education that I had received, and I was always so grateful for that. I wanted to make sure that I was able to honor those people that taught me in the beginning.
Right. It's not a career path that you hear about that often. So were you always like, yay, I'm going to go into the spirits or the mixology world? Did, you know, was that kind of a career aspiration for you?
In the 1980s, absolutely not. I come from a family of immigrants. And so they perceived a service job as a very low level. It wasn't a career. It wasn't something to be respected and be proud of. And doing any trade, you know, that's how we kind of, we have this very skewed view, which I'm the exact opposite, you know. So I was pressured to, you know, get an education, which I'm grateful for. Don't get me wrong. It was a privilege. But while I was going to school, I had to have a job. And I found myself being a little hostess at a restaurant. Mm-hmm. And quickly, I'm kind of like a strategic person. And I was like, I wonder what those waitresses make.
Yeah.
So I became a waitress, and then I was like, I wonder what those cocktail waitresses make. And they work shorter hours and they have a smaller room. That looks like more fun. So I did that, and I had to push my way into bartending, even in the early 90s as a woman. I was not in the place I was working. They didn't want anything to do with me, and I had to wait till someone broke their leg. I didn't break it. to be transparent.
Good to know.
It just was a happy coincidence for me. So I'm bartending and I'm making more money than all of my friends. And I'm working half the time. And I actually like what I was doing. But the pressure of society, the pressure of my family, like, oh, you're a bartender? What are you going to school for? Not that people don't still get asked that. And so I did go into the corporate world, which was a vacuum of despair and horror. I hated it so much. I'm like, why am I working this much and this hard for a fraction of what I was making before? And it's not just about the money. I wasn't fulfilled. I like to be of service to people, it turns out. I like that. I like to host. I like to create an experience for you. I like to give you something and see you have joy, right? I get something from that. That's just my personality. I would find out later. So I kept going in and out, and finally decided to stand up to anyone that gave me crap. And I was like, look, I like doing this. And by the way, this is how much I make.
In my family,
yeah, my family, fair enough, was like, but do you have retirement? Do you have healthcare? And I'm like, no, I do not. But fair point. So sorted all of that out. So it is something that I wish, part of me wishes I would have started now, because now we have the word mixologist. Mm. Now we have hired standards of minimum pay for people in service. There's a lot of work to do still, that's for sure. But there's also an American craft community and culture of spirits, and we didn't have that. So imagine when I was starting behind the bar, most states in the United States, you could not manufacture spirits illegally.
Mm.
That's pretty huge, right? Most people were not asking for, you know, whiskey neat or on the rocks, unless they were older men and asking for scotch, and would most likely say scotch. And that meant whatever the hell scotch you had,
right?
You know, so it's, so much has changed. So for me, I don't think there's a lot of people, I'm sure there's some people out there that were like, yeah, I want to do this in the 70s and 80s because of, like, I'm going to date myself now, like Isaac, the bartender on the Love Boat.
You know, I want to be. Love that show too.
The Love Boat. Yeah. So like, oh, that looks cool. He's making these frozen fancy drinks on a ship. That's awesome. But also he was wearing a full tuxedo in the heat of the sun.
Yeah.
No kidding. So, you know.
And if you've ever actually been on a cruise, you know they were so hard. So.
Yes. Yeah. Good thing I didn't do that. Yeah. So I think I always knew I love to learn. I learn something new every day. I love to talk about what I learned, but it's great for my career. And so I knew those things. I knew that I really liked being at the bar. And then when I got the opportunity to actually, when people started saying, hey, come to the place where we make the thing we want to show you, like come to a winery, some brands will actually fly bartenders to Mexico to see how tequila is made or mezcal, you know, not that I got a ton of trips like that, but I got a few and it changed everything for me. Every time I went on a tour, I lived in Europe for a long time. I was like, I want to be that person guiding the tour. Whoa, that looks like fun. How do you do that? And then one day I was. But also being me, I wanted to make the stuff too. And so I did work in production for a short period of time. I wanted to learn how do you actually make whiskey and how are spirits made. And so it was just kind of a lot of luck, a lot of strange circumstances. And then a lot of me kind of seeing the next thing that looked interesting to me in the industry and working really hard to get there and do a good job.
Wow. That's quite the story and path. It's very gin-spiring.
It is very inspiring.
Okay, so now let's get down to the nitty-gritty.
Yeah.
Let's talk about gin. Okay.
Yeah.
So let's talk about gin. So what are some of your favorite current gins, I guess, and why? Let's just start there.
As I mentioned, the Botanist is one of my absolute favorites. Not only do I love the flavor, but I love the story. I love the story of how they forged for the botanicals. I love the flavor and how I love that it's sippable, but it's also great for cocktails and won't get lost in cocktails, which is really important to me.
Absolutely.
So a lot of versatility. And Monkey 47. I mean, who doesn't love Monkey 47?
Right.
I do. I also love Japanese gin, which I think we're going to start seeing more of in the market. So watch out for that. I may know a few things. Wink, wink. So Nika Coffee Gin. Now it's coffee, C-O-F-F-E-Y. That's the type of still. It's a coffee still.
Okay.
There is something very magical about this still. It's not necessarily a pot still, and it's not necessarily a column still. It was invented, I think, in the early 1800s. And so it's two columns, but the way the compartments are separated just make it a little different. And for me, from everything that I've tasted that's made in a coffee still, and Nika also has a whiskey, I don't know. There's like magical unicorns in there. using wands or something inside these stills.
They're just dancing around.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like, yeah, I don't know. So definitely the Nika is, I'm obsessed with N-I-K-K-A. Mm-hmm. And then I would say, so I'm a Hendrix fan, and I know there can be a lot of like, oh, you know, sigh Hendrix, but I'm a really huge fan of Leslie Gracie, who is the master distiller of Hendrix.
Yes.
Talk about a magical unicorn. Yeah. That's definitely Leslie. I mean, she works in a gin palace. Come on.
Yeah.
It's literally, you guys listening, Google Gin Palace. It'll come up right away. It's bonkers. And so she's a literal mad scientist. She had been working with William Grant & Sons for many, many years. And they're like, you know, gin's not doing anything. Let's see if we can do something with it. And so it was like, I think like mid late 90s. And since she's a chemist as well, she's like, okay. And they had bought these two stills in the 1960s. They're very small pot stills. And I think they date from like the 1860s to like the early 1900s.
Wow.
Just not efficient, like for modern production, of course, you know. Right. So she used it though for like test batches and like, you know, like seeds and roots. And like, I think just trying to like suss out how to manage getting flavors out of botanicals in different parts of the process rather than taking the basket or the bag of botanicals and drop it. There's different ways to get oils out. And, you know, so I think that her legacy is going to be mind blowing. They've imported so many different botanicals that are inside growing in, it's like a hothouse. It's like a glass house.
Yeah, I've seen pictures of it. I haven't been, but I've definitely seen photos.
Bonkers.
Yeah.
It's on the coast as well. So you're getting a lot of salinity. And she wanted to make a gin that was like having a cucumber sandwich in a rose garden.
Yeah. And then they just keep producing these limited edition ones that are off the charts. You know, I love their limited edition ones, and I get it. Not that I have most selection here where I live, but when I do have access to one of them, we buy it. So let's talk about cocktails. I know you have a really interesting story about our most favorite classic, the gin and tonic.
Yeah. So I can't remember really when I learned this story. Someone told me that I was learning from another bartender said, you know, if you see old guys at a bar, that's who you want to talk to. They're the ones that might have been bartending when, because we've gone through these waves where bartenders were pretty well respected. You know, they would typically write the cocktail book for the bar or hotel and it would get published. It was a little bit more of a white collar position. And so I remember this guy telling me this. And so, of course, there's me running around all the bars in New York City looking for older people. But he was right.
You're like a stalker or something.
Can I see your ID? No, can I see your ID? Mm. Are you old enough to talk to me right now behind your bar? So I learned the story of the gin and tonic, and it's by far one of my favorite cocktail stories, hands down. When the British Army was in India colonizing, as they did, their troops were dropping like flies from malaria, as you would have then. And so there was a Scottish doctor. Thank you again to the Scots. Yeah. I love that his last name is Cleghorn because it reminds me of the rooster fog. What was his name? Foghorn.
Foghorn. Yes. Yeah.
That's how I remember the story. That's how I remember his name. He's kind of experimenting and studying how quinine can cure malaria and stave off malaria. Forget just, which is really interesting, or an interesting property that it can prevent and cure. So he tells the, as the army doctor, you know, he's telling the generals or whatever majors, make them take this much quinine every day. You have to make them do it. Well, oh my God, it was so bitter. Yeah. But I mean, bitter, like it would wipe out your palate for a week, bitter, just horrific. You couldn't get the taste out of your mouth. And so they know these troops aren't taking it because they're still either falling really ill or some of them, you know, not surviving. And they're like, oh no, what are we going to do? And so I believe the true part of the story is that it was actually an Indian person that said, let's add a little bit of sugar to it, a little bit of tonic water, and then you get your ration of gin anyway. And so the army had decided they were going to withhold the rations of gin. If they did, like, let me see you take that and then you'll get your ration of gin. And then so this was suggested and the guys started taking it with their gin and making this concoction, and it worked. And just all of a sudden, go figure, no one got malaria anymore.
There you go. Spoonful of sugar and gin goes a long way.
There you go. And then, of course, limes were prevalent and easy to get. And so, you know, you add a bit of lime. And so then this translates to bars. And of course, nowadays, the amount of quinine in tonic is nothing near what it used to be, where I think everyone would be having heart attacks. But, and it's also tonic water sweetened a little bit too, to take some of that bitter away. But yeah, that's one of my favorite cocktail stories about the gin and tonic. And I just kind of imagine these guys drinking this stuff and, God, is malaria worse or the taste of this quinine? I don't know.
Yeah, to be, go back in time and just see what they were talking about. Yeah. And it's a very old cocktail, right? It's been around for a very long time.
Very long time. So yep.
That covers our gin and tonic. What's, let's say, one or two more really favorite cocktails.
So I mentioned I'm a big daiquiri fan. Mm-hmm. And so the daiquiri, I love the daiquiri because it has so many applications. And I know that I mentioned bartender Isaac earlier on the show, but I'm not talking about the frozen daiquiri.
Oh, you're not? Come on.
That would be sacrilege, I tell you. You want to make Sailor angry?
Yeah, no.
Show me a frozen drink.
Oh.
So I love gin daiquiris, and I love getting, again, with such a simple build, it's really easy to make some really mind-blowing variations. And so I discovered butterfly pea flower a long time ago. One of my friends was becoming a tea sommelier. I forget what it's actually called. And it's really intense training. And she was like, oh my God, you got to see this in action. And so she showed me what happened when you added some acidity to it and it changed colors. And I was just like, oh, we got to use this behind the bar. Are you kidding me? Yeah. Not that I did not invent this, just to be clear. So of course, other people were doing this. I had just found out about it. So I love gin and sake together. Ooh. Probably my favorite combo. So I like to play around with botanicals and florals like this butterfly pea flower and sake and gin and make daiquiris, add a little egg white, and you've got the most gorgeous, velvety, beautiful, bright purple cocktail. And it's all natural, which is so awesome. But I'm telling you, gin, especially if it's an unfiltered sake, that's why I suggest adding the egg white, because the unfiltered sake is a little cloudy and it can look a little funky. That's okay. It's supposed to. But if you add that egg white to it, it kind of binds everything. And so it's a little bit more attractive. But you can use a filtered sake as well. And it just makes the most lovely, delicious cocktail with such a beautiful, it's just so fun to see the color change and, you know, yeah. Well, so that's big favorite of mine.
Yeah. I definitely need to add that one to my list. Okay. So you do tastings. I do want to touch on that briefly because it is your business. So yeah. Like, how does that work and what are you up to in that realm?
Yeah. So when the pandemic happened, I was a brand ambassador for a very, very large, fast-growing brand. And I had three states that I was in charge of. And my state in particular was shut down very early. I was in Washington State. We were the epicenter. We kind of knew something very serious was happening before everyone else. Things got real weird in Seattle. And so I had to stay at home and I was flipping out just like everybody else whose job was, I have to go places physically.
Yeah.
I have to drive around. I have to get on planes. I have to do tastings in person. I have to go to events. I have to go check in on liquor stores. Like, it was very scary. So they started putting everybody into groups of things that we could do that were not out in the market. Like, oh, Sailor, you do podcasts, so we're going to put you in charge of all of our social broadcasting. And I was like, sure.
Yay.
I don't know what the hell that means, but I was just like, yep, got it. Can do that. Absolutely. It's job security. So I started working with the director of social media for the company, and we started putting together broadcasts. I started figuring out how to do virtual tastings. Everybody in our industry moved really fast. That's one thing I got to say about the spirits industry. Man, within a couple of weeks, people had like tasting boxes figured out. You know, we were going for it. But I noticed quickly a lot of people were just doing tastings and obviously not sending anything to everybody because there's so many laws around that. And I started saying, you know, I wonder if I just send the stuff out and if I get in trouble, oh well. And so I thought, you know, I wanted to send a little something and see if that changes the attendance of the event. And of course it did. Mm-hmm. It also changed the experience people were having. So sometimes it was, I will send you the cocktail mix. You go out and buy the bottle because we needed the sales. And then I'll show you how to make a cocktail and we'll talk about what you're drinking. And then I started noticing that there were more women showing up. There were more people of color in the room. This was a more equitable space and a safer space because you could just keep your video off, or if it got weird, leave. If you didn't feel comfortable, you didn't have to speak if you didn't want to. That was exciting to me because typically I'm one of the few women, and for a long time, the only woman in the room at a tasting. So that was really interesting to me. And I was intrigued by the fact that you didn't have to drive to a certain place because the chapter of whatever spirit group is located there and they do all their events there. And then you got to get a hotel because you want to drive back. And, you know, this was so much easier and the reach was incredible. So I threw myself into it, and with the blessing of my brand, after a year and a half, decided to leave. And my husband and I decided to run away to Florida, which we did. And we started our own virtual event business and fulfillment. One of the things that's challenging that most people struggle with is how to fulfill these orders. So how you really, trust me, because I had to think about it, don't realize how many steps there are to putting all of these boxes together and getting them shipped out, you know, in time, figuring out how stuff won't break, trying to get the best shipping rate. What are you going to send with it? How are you going to price it? Supply chain issues, how to pivot on a dime when all of a sudden you can't get this and that, and you've got to navigate all these laws about where you can ship things to and where you can't. And all of a sudden corporations started coming to us and team building companies were born and everybody needs a fulfillment partner. I also do my own tastings. And so, you know, if you want to learn about whiskey, if you want to learn about gin, if you want to learn about whatever it is, you know, we do different flights and I work with different brands, especially minority-owned brands, women makers, to champion their brands. Mm-hmm. And it's so much fun and I have such a great time. It's a blast. Yeah. So I'd love for anyone listening to come join us.
Yeah. Okay. As I said, we could talk forever, but let's talk about your fun Jincident story.
Ooh, my fun Jincident story. So I've been thinking a lot about this. I was given the opportunity, and so I'm still not allowed to say what brand it was and where it was.
Of course.
So brand X They actually really made us sign forms. This was years and years and years ago. It's hilarious. So it was this Alice in Wonderland theme gin party. And it was a brand that was launching a new gin. So they were inviting, you know, restaurant owners and bar owners and distributors and like the people that need to be able to tell the story. And they really wanted to go for it with this brand. So you went in the afternoon and you attended a tasting and a brand story. And you learned about how it was made and, you know, all the talking points and everything. And then they're like, okay, so on the invitation, it said after that, it was in a hotel ballroom, like, you know, banquet room, whatever. Yeah. And it said, then you're going to go to this building across the street at this time. And there'll be like a dinner and cocktails. And you're just like, okay, great. And it just said like, it was Alice in Wonderland themed. So you should dress up. Mm. And so everyone in the room, we were just like dressed nice. We didn't think like dress and care, like who's going to show up to an afternoon tasting like that anyway. So I was like, okay. So as we're leaving the room, they're handing us a little box and we're like, okay. And good thing that the gal said, you have to open the box before you leave the hotel. And we're, okay. So we opened the box. And so there was a little tiny bottle with a tag that said, of course, drink me. Yeah. And on the other side, it said, read me. And there was a little scroll attached to the bottle. And it said, you have 1 hour to source items from wherever you can to make a costume for your character. And it said what character you were. Mm-hmm. And I was just like, what? I love dress up. So yeah. I was freaking out. I'm like, I don't have the money to go off the cuff buy stuff. And it said source. Mm-hmm. Like it didn't say, you know, so yeah. I'm trying to get creative and think of like all kinds of weird stuff. And, you know, they're like, look around you and look at. And so I saw some people like walking around, like grabbing stuff. And I'm like, these people are just grabbing random things from the hotel. But I didn't realize they had placed stuff all over this hotel. And so then we're like picking out people in costumes, like down the corridors. And there was all kinds of like little costume pieces, just like all over the whole floor of all these banquet rooms, just everywhere, tons and tons of stuff. It was incredible. And then we got another box at the end and it said to go into this one banquet room. And then there was the little rabbit with the scroll. And he announced there was actually going to be a bus that was going to take us somewhere. So we weren't going across the street. So, you know, here we are all dressed up crazy. We have no idea what's going on. And we got taken to a park and there's this huge tent and it was just this incredibly themed. Imagine if you've got a lot of money, what you could do.
Exactly.
The thing that was a little bit I would have rethought if I was them was they were passing around tea sandwiches and things like that. Mm-hmm. They should have started that just a little bit earlier because everywhere you went, there were teacups of different gin infusions.
Mm.
And I think they did something like 40 of them that night. And there was only a limited amount. So people were like going around to try and see, to try all these different infusions.
Right.
It was probably 1 ounce pours, but still there's something like, I don't know if it's 30 or 40. So we all drank a little bit.
Yeah.
And it happens, you know, I lost a lot of my costume pieces by the end of the night.
Can you tell us what character you were?
So I was Alice. I got Alice, wow. Which I was very happy about.
Better than the Cheshire Cat or something.
Yeah, like I don't know what I would have done. Or
Tweedledee or whatever.
Yeah. Tweedledee, Tweedledee. Yeah.
Yeah, those ones. Oh my gosh.
I would have liked to be the Queen of Hearts, I think. Yes. So.
Yeah, of course. If you weren't Alice, Queen of Hearts is absolutely perfect.
I would have been happy with the Mad Hatter that as one, well. Yeah. I could have definitely done that one. But yeah, there was a lot of Alice's, a lot of, you know, whatever, but yeah, that was such an amazing time. And when I got back to the hotel room and kind of looked at myself in the mirror, I was like, okay, I've been walking around looking like this for hours and now I don't know where half my stuff is. And I don't quite remember getting back on the bus to get to the hotel room, but here I am and all is well.
There.
And yeah.
And you didn't fall down the rabbit hole.
I did not. Well, that's not true. I think we all did. But then someone pulled us out when the bus arrived and said, get the hell out.
awesome. That's an awesome incident story.
Thank you.
I can guarantee you that no one has ever had one even slightly similar. So yay.
Awesome.
And there you have it. Everything you wanted to know about Sailor, what being a spirit specialist is all about, some really interesting gin facts and cocktails, and just so much more. And thank you, Sailor, so much for being here today. And thank you for listening. Be sure to leave us a review and check out the show notes for links to Sailor and theginshop.ca for all your gin clothing and novelty needs. And until next time, remember, life is too short for single gins.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Ginspired, brought to you by theginshop.ca. If we've ginspired you, let us know by leaving us a comment and a review, or drop us a note at heather@theginshop.ca. We may even read your email or feature your ginspirational story in an upcoming episode. And remember to follow us on social media. Until next time, let the party be ginned.